Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, we have bad, and we have crazy martinis for conservatives today. Every last bit of it related to the events of Tuesday evening, President Trump's address to the joint session of Congress, not technically a State of the Union, but both the good and the bad will come from that, and the crazy will come from the Democratic response by the spry 72-year-old former governor of Kentucky, Steve Beshear. Jim, the thing that struck me at first about Trump was just how normal he seemed to be in that environment and how natural it seemed. I wasn't sure if it would look odd given how different of an approach he takes to Washington, but his tone, he didn't shout like he did at the convention. He didn't look orange. He had intensity, but his pace was not at a frenetic pace. And then he also hit on a number of themes that obviously conservatives have been very vocal about for years. And here is a sample.
We want all Americans to succeed, but that can't happen in an environment of lawless chaos. We must restore integrity and the rule of law at our borders. Right now, American companies are taxed at one of the highest rates anywhere in the world. My economic team is developing historic tax reform that will reduce the tax rate on our companies so they can compete and thrive anywhere and with anyone. I have kept my promise to appoint a justice to the United States Supreme Court from my list of 20 judges who will defend our Constitution. These families should be free to choose the public, private, charter, magnet, religious, or homeschool that is right for them. Tonight, I am also calling on this Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare.
And finally, Jim, on our good martini, Trump not known for the soaring rhetoric, but there was quite a bit of it last night.
Think of the marvels we can achieve if we simply set free the dreams of our people. Cures to the illnesses that have always plagued us are not too much to hope. American footprints on distant worlds are not too big a dream. Millions lifted from welfare to work is not too much to expect. And streets where mothers are safe from fear, schools where children learn in peace, and jobs where Americans prosper and grow are not too much to ask.
And then, Jim, on top of all that, two of the most moving moments of the night were two of the folks he pointed out in the gallery. One was Jamil Shah, whose son was killed at the hands of an illegal immigrant. And then, of course, the one that really brought down the house was the tribute to the fallen SEAL on the recent Yemen raid. His widow, Corinne Owens, was there. The SEAL was Ryan Owens. Sustained multiple standing ovations. And if you weren't moved by that in some way, you better check your pulse. Overall, Trump vastly exceeding expectations and hitting on a lot of good conservative themes.
I called this decaffeinated Trump. And, you know, a lot of people said this, you know, was he on message or was he on medication? Because it was kind of the Trump I think a lot of us were hoping to see all along. Yes, obviously he's got a showman. Yes, you know, he's very entertaining when he starts ripping into his critics or giving out Lindsey Graham's cell phone number and things that are kind of, you know, comic antics. He can whip up a crowd, you know, into a great passionate frenzy. But that's not all. That's not the only job of the president. The president has to hit a lot of different emotional notes. And much to our surprise, when Trump tries, he can actually do that. And he does it pretty well. I think probably the two or obviously I think you put your finger on the moment of the night that was almost magic. It was the one that had Van Jones declaring him. This is when he really became president of the United States. Look, Trump gets accused of being a narcissist. This is a guy who has a very big ego, as all presidents do, and probably everyone in politics does. This is a guy who loves the spotlight. This is a guy who loves talking about how everything he does is the biggest, the greatest. And then at some point, at several points last night, he turns his attention to other Americans who we would not see on our television screens if he had not invited them and placed them in the gallery for this non-State of the Union joint address to Congress. And he talks about what they did. And what makes them special and what makes them important. And it's a very different moment for we're getting from Donald Trump. And, you know, whoever wrote that speech, you know, hit it out of the park. You know, the phrase etched in eternity. you know, as you said, it was a great emotional moment, and it really had very little to do with any of the usual combative politics we've seen over the last 2 years. It was an acknowledgement that, God, aren't we blessed to have men and women like this in uniform who are willing to take those risks and who know those risks and who dive into the mission anyway in order to keep us safe. And, you know, this kind of, you know, sinking recognition that even if we had a VA that functioned the way it was supposed to, even if we donate to charities to help veterans and their families, we really don't do enough. There's a question of whether we ever could do enough. But these are big questions and big moments of our country and our identity and what we prioritize and what we value, which are much better than your usual, you know, angry comments about Twitter. Trump closed by saying it was time to put aside our trivial disputes. I certainly hope he's right on that, and I hope he doesn't follow this up by, you know, another four tweets about how terrible Alec Baldwin is, you know, when he impersonates him on Saturday Night Live. I really liked this Trump. The suit, the image, the tone, it all came very presidential. And I saw a comment somebody had said to Noah Rothman of Commentary on Twitter earlier today, which may kind of like, if Trump gets a very big bump out of this, he may have actually, you know, stumbled onto the core appeal of his presidency. Most Americans don't want to think about politics. Most Americans don't want to have to worry about what the government is doing. And we've had two straight terms, some might say go back even further, in which the president on any given day could be enacting Obamacare or bombing a country, or there could be constantly something new that the government was doing. And most Americans don't want to have to think about that. We can argue about whether this is a disengaged public, but the bottom line is they have lives they want to lead. They have jobs to do. They have kids they want to raise. They have other interests. They don't want to constantly be focused on the latest political battle. So if Trump acts like a normal president, maybe we're going back to normal times. And normal times look really good right now after the last couple of years. So bravo, Mr. President. I think he really hit it out of the park in a lot of ways and surprised a lot of us. Hopefully more of this is to come. Trump's history makes me a little wary of that. But for now, I'm just going to let's savor this moment, because we rarely see things go this well this quickly.
That's certainly true. There were a few moments where we thought there might be the pivot towards presidential during the campaign. It didn't last too long, but we'll see now. Given the positive response he got from across the board and how much he closely pays attention to what gets him positive feedback, maybe we will see it in a more sustained way, but time will tell. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, as we have established a lot over nearly 2 years now, Donald Trump is not necessarily a rock rib conservative when it comes to all policy details. We listed a number of them in the good martini that we would certainly applaud, and most conservatives did last night. But there are also some bigger government ideas in there that we need to point out. And here's a quick montage of three of the biggest ones.
To launch our national rebuilding, I will be asking Congress to approve legislation that produces a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure of the United States, financed through both public and private capital, creating millions of new jobs. My administration wants to work with members of both parties to make child care accessible and affordable, to help ensure new parents that they have paid family leave. We should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts. But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government.
So, Jim, the infrastructure, $1 trillion. We'll see how it's structured. Obviously, every Republican voted against that basic idea in the stimulus bill, and for good reason. We'll see how this might be different. But that is a lot of money to pump into this system and to put on the taxpayers. Family leave, that's been a liberal initiative for a long time. And tax credits, some people might say, what's the big deal about that? That's better than what we've got. But once again, it's the government kind of deciding who wins and loses.
Yeah, I'm going to take this in reverse order, Greg. So I've talked about this in a couple of our podcasts and wrote about it in my interview with Scott Walker. Walker is one of those guys who really seems to like the idea of removing the system of subsidies under Obamacare and replacing it, particularly for those who are part of the Medicaid expansion, and giving you a tax credit. Now, if it's a refundable tax credit, you deduct whatever amount you're paying against your taxes. And then if there's any surplus on that, well, you get that in the form of a government check. So as I said on CNN International yesterday, Greg, under the old system, the government would give you money. But under the new system, the government would give you money. and if you're a conservative and you're like, hey, wait a minute. That doesn't sound like that big sweeping radical change we were hoping for. It's because it really, you know, there's an argument that it really isn't. Now, Scott Walker and certain folks who like this idea say, look, a tax credit is part of the idea of moving people from government dependency and welfare to work. This is not simply the government handing you stuff. This is you're working. Like you're trying to move from a government program to becoming a self-sufficient working American. And we want to reward that. We want to, you know, say you're doing the right thing and we want to help you out. And that's why this is not quite the same as just the government just handing the money. You may agree with that perspective, you may disagree with that perspective, but I think the Republican Party really needs leadership from the president on this. I would very much understand if you know, President Trump's attitude is, look, I got elected by people who feel like they're barely getting by and that they can't afford anything. I'm not going to yank away their Medicaid coverage that they got under Obamacare. That's not going to be my first act that I do as president. I completely understand the Republicans' political reluctance. Having said that, if they go along with this, they're basically saying Obamacare has expanded entitlements. It has created a new benefit that the government is obligated to provide to you. And we, the Republicans, have signed on to this. This is one of the reasons we fought against Obamacare so much, because once the government gets in the habit of giving you something, it is very hard to stop that habit. On the family leave, you could just call that the Ivanka section.
Yes.
That's what she wants. That's what she believes. I think there are probably some folks on the right who might argue this is a ostensibly pro-family party, a pro-family policy. I think obviously a lot of employers would say, wait a second. I don't need the federal government stepping in and telling me what to do on this. I have a feeling that the politics on this one are going to be very tough to resist. Having said that, once again, we're creating another entitlement. We're creating something the government is saying that your employer has to give to you. And gee, that wouldn't lead to higher prices or anything, now would it? The third thing on the infrastructure spending, look, it's not like we're opposed to all infrastructure spending, but there's kind of this nagging feeling of, the first thing Obama did was pass a giant stimulus. One of the first acts of the Trump administration is apparently going to be to try to push through a $1 trillion infrastructure spending program that looks an awful lot like the stimulus. Let's hope those jobs genuinely are shovel ready this time. No doubt we have genuine infrastructure spending needs. But it just kind of feels like we're a little bit of the political version of Groundhog Day. We're seeing things come back under a completely different name, and probably very different partisan attitudes towards them.
Yeah, could be. So a lot of battles to come, some good, some tough. Let's move on to the final martini now. And Jim, it's always tough to give the response. Steve Beshear, for some reason, was the choice of the Democrats this year. He's not a rising star. He's not even in office.
He's the opposite of a rising star. He's a declining star. He's burned out.
Yeah, and so, but as I was pointing out to a friend last night, he's 72 years old. If, in fact, he's hoping this was a launching pad for 2020, and we're about to point out why it probably won't be, he'd still be younger than Biden or Bernie Sanders. So he's kind of the young pup in this emerging race for 2020 for the Democrats. Jim, there have been some awkward moments for Republicans giving response. Your favorite governor of recent years, Bobby Jindal, with the staircase didn't go so well. Marco Rubio.
You take that back, Greg. That speech was a masterpiece. Brilliant. No one appreciated it. No one understood.
Marco Rubio with the water. Everyone made a lot of fun about that. But neither of them, nor any Republican that I'm aware of, ever actually identified himself with the other party. Here's how Steve Beshear started on Tuesday night.
I'm a proud Democrat. But first and foremost, I'm a proud Republican and Democrat and mostly American.
First of all, it's in this diner, and the first shot was the outside of the diner, so you weren't sure if it was a Saturday Night Live skit or the Seinfeld gang was going to show up. And then Steve Beshear spends a lot of time defending the most unpopular part of the Obama legacy, perhaps, at least domestically, and that's Obamacare.
In 2010, this country made a commitment that every American deserved health care they could afford and rely on. And we Democrats are going to do everything in our power to keep President Trump and the Republican Congress from reneging on that commitment.
So, Jim, finally, obviously he and the other Democrats were expecting a combative speech, so he went on to talk about how Donald Trump has been divisive and all sorts of other ways that it's been really ugly. And then Trump gives this soaring attempt at unity, and the vicious criticism from Beshear seems really out of place at the end.
Yeah, let's grant that you're right. History has demonstrated that there's really no good, easy way to give a good response to the State of the Union or a joint address to Congress. Some people said that I believe it was Bob McDonnell did it to the Virginia House of Delegates. I believe Christy Whitman did it. If you do it to a state legislature and you have your own audience in front of you applauding, then it kind of turns out to be the equivalent. But as you said, yes, rising star after rising star has tried and fallen. It's as if there's a old gypsy curse on this role, and that anybody who has it will suddenly be struck by thirst like Marco Rubio or have something go terribly wrong. So maybe Steve Beshear is jumping on a grenade for the rest of the Democratic Party and doing the job that everybody knows you can't do well. And then undoubtedly the desire to have an audience, the desire to have not just one person in a room just talking to a camera, is why they had the people there. But obviously it's not like the half dozen or so very white people in the background. Right? I mean, if a Republican did that, Greg, we'd be hearing all about the all-white vision of the Republican crowd, the white supremacist, white national. Look, I can't help but notice. But when the Democrats do it, it's totally fine. Basically, the entire message of the response is, white people, we no longer want to frighten you. Please come back to us. And the other nagging, frightening feeling was just kind of this like, so they're all just sitting there, quiet, stone-faced. I think they've been told not to obviously interrupt. It's not like you had a lot of great applause lines in that. But Greg, tell me I'm wrong. The guy at the left of him, the older gentleman, I'm fairly certain he fell asleep, or at least I hope he fell asleep. I'm hoping that he did not actually pass away during Beshear's response. All it was missing was a "we thank you for your support" from Bartles and James at the end. Or the observation that he looked an awful lot like the guy who was the head of that Hale Bopp Comet cult. Speaking to everybody. But, considering how the Hale Bopp Comet cult met its end in California, maybe that's the appropriate metaphor for the Kentucky Democratic Party today.
Oh, fantastic. I'm a proud Republican and Democrat and American. Oh, yeah.
How well are Republicans doing? Even the Democrats are becoming Republicans. That's how.
Oh, Jim, the night went far better than I think either one of us could have expected. Talk to you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow, Greg. Let's just enjoy it while it lasts.
Amen. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.